name is Nikki Strong. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Mario Ritter Jr. reports on two workers that cut an opening through the Great Wall of China. Gina Bennett has a story on Afghans in the United States. Gregory Stockel reports on a time capsule opened at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. I have a story on efforts to revive indigenous languages in Australia. And later, John Russell brings us this week's Everyday Grammar. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
For more than 2,000 years, only conqueror Genghis Khan and the Manchus, who formed the Qing Dynasty, had broken through China's Great Wall. Now, two building workers are accused of smashing through the wall to make a shortcut. The Great Wall is a cultural symbol of China and a United Nations protected heritage area. On Wednesday, Chinese officials arrested two workers for cutting a path through a part of the ancient wall. The area is far from the restored parts of the wall that most Chinese and foreign travelers visit. The government of Youyou County, hundreds of kilometers west of Beijing, showed a dirt road cut through a part of the wall in a rural area. They identified the two workers as a 38-year-old man named Zheng and a 55-year-old woman named Wang. The local government said the two wanted a shorter path to some work they were doing in nearby towns. That part of the wall is in Shanxi province. Parts of the wall there were built 2,000 years ago. It is in good condition and holds important preservation and research value. China's Great Wall is a system of towers and connecting walls that stretch 8,850 kilometers. It was built mainly during the native Ming Dynasty, which governed until 1644. In that year, the Manchus from the north overcame China's defenses and took over as the Qing Dynasty. The wall was then abandoned, and villagers took away bricks and stones. The Chinese Communist government later revived parts of the wall as a symbol of patriotism, mass mobilization, and resistance to outside pressure. The Youyou County government said the arrests were made after a report of the breach was received on August 24th. It said the two suspects were arrested and would face legal action. In describing the Great Wall, UNESCO said it shows the collision and exchange between agricultural civilizations and nomadic civilizations in ancient China. The UN agency said the wall provides physical evidence of political and military thinking. It added that the structure is a great example of military architecture, technology, and art of ancient China. I'm Mario Ritter Jr.
The U.S. Department of State says that nearly 90,000 Afghans have come to the United States through a special federal program since 2021. The program is called Operation Allies Welcome. The U.S. government created Operation Allies Welcome to help resettle Afghans who had worked with the U.S. in Afghanistan until it withdrew. Farzana Jamalzadeh fled Afghanistan after the Taliban took control of the country in August 2021. Jamalzadeh feared that her work with the U.S. government put her in danger. Jamalzadeh settled in New York City. The government program gave her permission to live and work in the U.S. for 2 years. She got a job with an organization that helps people in need, a charity. The job provided her with money to pay for a place to live and other necessities. But the 2 years ended at the end of August. She and her family are waiting for an immigration interview for their application to live and work in the U.S. permanently. The document that permits this is known as a green card. Reuters news agency reported that President Joe Biden's administration extended the permission for 2 more years in June. But the permission to stay in the country is still temporary. Difficulty with immigration documents is common for many Afghans who were resettled through Operation Allies Welcome. Their path to legally living in the U.S. permanently is not simple. A group of U.S. lawmakers from both political parties, men and women who served in the U.S. military, and others are working to support a new law to help Afghan immigrants. The Afghan Adjustment Act aims to create a direct path for Afghans to live and work in the U.S. permanently. The goal would be for many Afghans to become citizens in the future. But the legislation has not made progress in the House of Representatives or in the Senate. Danilo Zak is with Church World Service, a group that assists refugees. Zak said there are many Afghans who simply do not have money for or cannot find immigration assistance. Unlike some others, Jamalzadeh and her husband do have a path to a green card. They can request a special immigrant visa. The special immigrant visa is for translators, interpreters, and others who assisted the U.S. government in the war in Afghanistan. But Jamalzadeh had to flee Afghanistan so suddenly that her visa was not fully processed. To get a green card, Jamalzadeh and her husband must attend a government interview on September 12th. Until that time, she and her husband may not legally work. Jamalzadeh said she hopes the U.S. Congress passes the Afghan Adjustment Act. She said she wants her friends and family already in the U.S. to not have to worry about their ability to live and work in the country. You never know what's gonna happen to you, she said. I'm Gina Bennett.
Officials at the U.S. Military Academy West Point in New York State recently opened a time capsule that is 195 years old live on the internet. The event on August 28th caused disappointment because the container appeared to contain nothing more than dirt. But West Point officials said last Wednesday that the box did contain hidden treasure after all. A time capsule is a container that is filled with objects and buried or hidden. The capsule is meant to be opened by people living many years in the future. The lead box is believed to have been put in place by West Point military students. It was discovered inside the base of a memorial to Revolutionary War hero Thaddeus Kosciuszko. The capsule contained 6 silver American coins dating from 1795 and 1828. And a medal, West Point said in a news release. The ceremonial opening of the box happened at the military school in New York State. Speaking of the event, West Point archaeologist Paul Hudson said, "When I first found these, I thought, man, you know, it would have been great to have found these on stage." After the opening, he took the box back to his laboratory and began carefully looking through the remains. He said he then found the edge of a coin in the dust inside the box. "I thought, well, that's okay. That's something. That's a start," Hudson said. He said he felt let down like everyone else by the lack of results from the live opening. The crowd that gathered at the U.S. Military Academy hoped to see historical military objects or documents when experts opened the top and pointed a camera inside. It was probably better to remove the coins and medal in a controlled setting, added Hudson. He still plans to study the remains for possible answers to what else might be inside. It appears that moisture and possibly dirt entered the box through a damaged edge. The conditions could have destroyed materials like paper or wood. What did survive was a 5-cent coin from the year 1795, an 1800 Liberty dollar, an 1818 25-cent coin, 10-cent and 1-cent coins from 1827, and an 1828 50-cent coin. There was also a medal remembering the Erie Canal from 1826. The discoveries seem to confirm school officials' theory that the box was put in place by military students in 1828 or 1829. The monument to Kosciuszko, which included a statue of him, was completed at about that time. A group of five military students, or cadets, was involved in the ceremony dedicating the monument. One of them was U.S. Civil War General Robert E. Lee, who graduated in 1829. Kosciuszko had designed wartime fortifications for the Continental Army at West Point during the Revolutionary War. He died in 1817. The statue of Kosciuszko was added to the monument in 1913. The historical preservation and research of the time capsule will continue. I think there's more that we can learn from this, Hudson said. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Some of Australia's indigenous communities are hoping a national vote that would change the country's constitution could give native people more of a voice in the government. The vote, known as a referendum, would put in the nation's constitution a way for indigenous people to advise parliament on policies that affect their lives. The vote, officially called Voice to Parliament, will be held on October 14th. Leaders of some indigenous groups are looking to the process to help save their cultures and languages. Clark Webb is seeking to do that for his native or Aboriginal community, the Goombanger people. Webb recently led a class of schoolchildren as they danced to native songs. Opening our own schools, that's sovereignty in action, Webb said. He and others want to bring back the indigenous language spoken in Coffs Harbor, a coastal town about 500 kilometers north of Sydney. And so we need that voice there to lobby for that. Webb started the Goombanger Gligana Freedom School last year. It was the first bilingual indigenous school in Australia's most populous state of New South Wales. The effort is part of an attempt to bring back dozens of languages that are close to dying out. It is being supported by federal and state governments. Many of Australia's indigenous people see the recovery of languages as very important to the survival of their cultures. Australia's indigenous and Torres Strait Islander communities are perhaps the world's oldest. They have a history on the continent dating back tens of thousands of years. After colonization by Great Britain in 1788, the people increasingly faced discrimination, which continued long after Australia became a nation in 1901. Government officials often moved indigenous people from their traditional lands, known as country. They forcibly separated indigenous children from their families, resulting in a stolen generation from the mid-19th century to the 1970s. As late as the 1980s, officials punished indigenous people for speaking their languages. I think, growing up, I knew there was something missing from my life, Webb said. And as I got older, I realized that was our language. Webb estimates there are now about 30 proficient or highly proficient speakers of Gumbanger. Among them is his 9-year-old daughter. Australia has one of the world's highest rates of language loss in the world. At the time of European colonization, more than 250 indigenous languages, including 800 dialects, were believed to have been spoken on the continent. But the most recent population data shows that more than 150 languages were still being spoken in 2021. However, just 9.5% of indigenous Australians reported speaking one or more languages at home. Ray Ingray is one of a handful of people fluent in Darwal. It was the first language heard by British explorer Captain James Cook when he landed in Australia in 1770. Ingray heads the Gujaga Foundation. It was founded in 2019 to bring back the language. He said government policies in those days severely hurt the ability to pass the language on from one generation to the next. Officials had barred the grandparents of Webb and Ingray from speaking their native languages, and some relatives were threatened by the police for speaking it anywhere. Author and teacher Jasmine Seymour is leading efforts to revive the Darug Aboriginal language among hundreds of school children in Sydney. Most of the children are non-Indigenous. Seymour is related to Maria Locke, the first Aboriginal person to marry a European settler, and one of the first admitted to a school to learn English. To be at the other end of history, where my language is being revitalized in school, is completely profound, she said.
Artificial intelligence, or AI, has been the subject of many news reports this year. It has also been part of many everyday discussions. It will likely continue to be a popular subject of discussion in the coming years, too. So, how might one talk about artificial intelligence? What kinds of terms and structures should you use? In this week's Everyday Grammar, we will explore a point of connection between grammar and technology. You will learn how to ask questions about artificial intelligence. You will also learn some ways to express your own opinions about AI. Let's start with questions. Questions generally come in two forms, yes or no questions and open-ended questions. Yes or no questions ask for a yes or a no answer. Open-ended questions are seeking more information than a simple yes or no answer. Open-ended questions are the secret to good discussions. By asking open-ended questions, you can learn much more about the thoughts and opinions of others. We often use question words to ask open-ended questions. When we discuss artificial intelligence, a few question words will be especially useful. These are what, why, and how. Consider these three questions.
What do you think of artificial intelligence? Why are people concerned about artificial intelligence? How will artificial intelligence affect our lives?
Note that there is a general structure to all of these questions. They begin with the question word. Then they involve some kind of helping verb: do, be, or will. Then we have the subject of the sentence, the main verb, and the rest of the sentence. If we reduced these ideas into a kind of math formula, you might say the following.
Open-ended question equals a question word plus a helping verb plus a subject plus a main verb plus the rest of the sentence.
We can ask open-ended questions in different tenses. For example, we could ask about the past, as in,
how did you first hear about artificial intelligence?
In this case, we changed the helping verb do into its past form, did. We can also ask about the future, as in,
how will artificial intelligence change our lives over the next 20 years?
We have explored questions, but how can we answer such questions? One way to think of your answer is in terms of good, bad, and mixed. You might use terms such as positive, negative, optimistic, or pessimistic. Consider this question.
What do you think of artificial intelligence?
You might have a positive opinion and say something like this.
I am optimistic about artificial intelligence.
You might have a negative opinion and say something like this.
I am pessimistic about artificial intelligence.
If your views go both ways, you might say,
I have mixed opinions about artificial intelligence.
Of course, after all of these answers, you should be prepared to give more details. We often use the word because followed by a clause, a subject and predicate group. So, you might say,
I am optimistic about artificial intelligence because people will be more productive with it.
Or,
I am pessimistic about artificial intelligence because I think it will hurt the labor force in a powerful way.
In today's lesson, we explored a few ways to ask questions and give answers about artificial intelligence. Such discussions could take place in an everyday discussion or as part of an English test. Let's end today with a homework assignment. Write an answer to the question you heard earlier in the report.
How will artificial intelligence change our lives over the next 20 years?
Before writing your answer, be sure to consider what views you have. Ask yourself if you see the future in a positive way, a negative way, or in a mixed way. Send us your answers at learningenglish@voanews.com. I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.